Welcome to Hot Breath Comedy Fam. On Monday, May 13th, I am teaching a clean comedy workshop. The last four I have taught sold out very quickly. So if you want to learn about clean comedy, the business side, where the line is, how to write clean comedy, go to the link in the description of this episode and we'll see you there. What's goody, Hot Breathiverse? We have a very special Hot Breathisode today. You know our mission is to cultivate the next generation of self-made comics. And today I'm getting interviewed by one of those next generation comics. A student in Canada reached out to me wanting to interview me for his school project all about how to become a comedian. His name is Yurei Chu, and I had a blast being on the other side of the microphone. I'm usually the one asking the questions, but this time he's grilling me on my own comedy journey. So this is a perspective of comedy you may have not have heard before, so I'm excited to share it with you. And if you do enjoy it, please let me know. And the video is also up on our Patreon if you're interested in watching that. But now there's only one thing left to do. Inhale a hot breath with me and Yurei Chu.
It just made a noise and I think it's recording right now.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, and please just send me this after we're done as well. I'd love to post the interview to my podcast. I think it'll be an interesting conversation.
I was really excited when you told me that I might actually be on your podcast. I thought that's a really cool thing to brag about.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I was excited you reached out. What is the project?
So
can I ask you
it's a school project, and everybody chooses a career that they would like to be part of, mm-hmm. or something that they would like to do. And then I chose comedy because I've gone up on stage a few times. And I think comedy is something that I think is a really cool thing. I really enjoy doing it. And you have to interview someone who is in that profession. And so I decided, why don't I come and ask you? Because I think you're very funny, and I think it'd be really cool to talk to a professional comedian.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to help out however I can here.
Mm-hmm. So where are you calling from right now?
I am in Atlanta.
That's in Georgia, right?
Atlanta, Georgia, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how long have you been doing stand-up comedy?
As of February 1st, I've been doing stand-up comedy 14 years.
14 years. So you started when you were how old?
22.
22. And is there a story behind that?
Well, I had always wanted to try comedy. I was always funny growing up. I was voted wittiest in my high school. So I was always funny. But the difference between being funny off stage and on stage is huge. And jumping over that initial hurdle of getting on stage took me until my senior year of college. I was about to graduate in just a few months, and I had always wanted to try this comedy thing. So I went to an open mic, and as soon as I did my first open mic, I knew that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So comedy has always been a part of my life, and now I'm grateful to say it is also my job, which is a blessing.
Yeah, I was talking with another professional comedian, and I asked him, do you tell people you're a professional comedian? He said, hell no. He said... Because he said whenever he tells people he's a comedian, people are like, oh, tell us a joke. Or if someone says something fun, he's like, you better use that in your next set or something like that. And it gets pretty lame. Do you find yourself with that sort of thing?
Yeah, I don't volunteer the information for sure. I do. Unless someone asks, I don't usually volunteer because that is the normal reaction. They have a joke you should do on stage, or there's always it always changes the dynamic of the relationship for some reason, mm-hmm. because comedy is interesting in that, unlike in music, which you're familiar with,
yeah,
people don't see someone playing an instrument and think, oh, I can do that. They're just up there moving their fingers or whatnot. But with comedy, people see a comedian on stage and assume, oh, well, I've gotten a laugh before. I've been mm-hmm. funny in a social setting or at work or at a family event. And the difference between being funny around friends versus a room of strangers in a dark room, it's a completely different type of funny. It's a completely different skill set that you have to hone over years and decades. So when people, a lot of the times, meet a comedian, if they're funny, if it's like a funny person in their day-to-day life, they almost feel like, oh, well, I'm a comedian too. So they kind of want to have that rapport with you, which I'm happy to do. And I don't take it as annoying or offensive. I think it's a great part of the job that people do resonate with what you do so much that they want to be a mm-hmm. part of it. And that being said, I also won't volunteer the information just for that fact that it can be annoying, but it's mm-hmm. it's a good problem to have, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever have a go-to line when someone says, tell me a joke or something like that?
Usually what I do is I roast them. Basically, if they're like, tell me a joke, I'll say, the only joke I can think of is that shirt you're wearing. And
that's a good one.
But it's just like a quick little quip that kind of just gets them off balance and maybe less enthusiastic to keep on pressing me about that.
Mm-hmm. And have you met any other comedians?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, even on my podcast, I've interviewed over 400 comedians about comedy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, comedians, it is like a family. We do have a shorthand with each other where when you do meet another comedian out at a show or even run into one at an airport that you're familiar with, and there's a definite camaraderie in the comedy community. So yeah, there's a reason Jerry Seinfeld has like comedians in cars getting coffee, and he always just wants to talk to comedians because we have a different rapport with each other as opposed to just the day to day. So yeah, I love meeting new comedians and learning from them and working together. And it's such a lonely journey in a lot of ways. When you're on the road, it can be just you for a lot of it. And you're driving alone and you're in the hotel alone. And then you're on stage in this room. And then a few hours later, you're back in your hotel room alone type deal. So mm-hmm. it's always good to keep in contact with other comedians who are on this journey with you, and you guys can celebrate and commiserate in this comedy journey.
You talked about comedy being kind of a lone thing, which is kind of weird because usually comedy and making people laugh is about being around people, and it's like a kind of a contrast. Am I right to say that?
For sure, yeah, and it's just you on stage as well. So you're in a room full of people and you're the only one talking, hopefully. And that is a communal experience. And also you're on stage alone saying these things yeah. that you most likely wrote alone and then tried out a lot alone and just developed alone. So yeah, comedy's a lot of travel, and if you're fortunate enough, you can start to travel with friends and do things like that. But overall, it is a lot of on your own, figuring this out, just mm-hmm. one show at a time.
Mm-hmm. And I guess another big part of it is actually writing the material mm-hmm. and then going on stage and then testing out the material, seeing if it works or not, and then tweaking a little bit between sets and then going up and just keep going and refining the set
over and over and over and over yeah. and over again. You know, the number one piece of advice from my podcast, the number one, I always end the episode with, what advice do you have for the next generation of comedians? And it's always get on stage. It's always mm-hmm. you have to get on stage. And a big part of that is testing your material that you've been writing off stage and also developing that stage presence, developing that confidence. A lot of comedy is confidence. And the only way to really be confident on stage is to be on stage a lot in a bunch of different uncomfortable situations where you mm-hmm. fail a lot and you grow from that and you develop and you get stronger from that. So the writing process is, for me personally, writing off stage and having a set list to go on stage with, try out some jokes, maybe some I know work, and then maybe some newer ones I sandwich in between the ones mm-hmm. I know work. So if the new jokes don't work, I can save the set with some stuff I know works. And you record the set, you review the set, and see little refinements here and there. It's the development of a joke is very incremental. It's figuring out how you want to say it the first time, and then tweaking maybe some of the words you use or tweaking how you say it. If you emphasize the opening word versus the third word, does that make a difference? If you make a facial expression or a physical gesture as you're delivering the punchline, does that make a difference? And it's all just on stage, getting that data, getting that feedback from the audience, and just repeat over and over and over again.
And what does your writing process look like? Do you actually sit down and write jokes, or are you, before you go on, you're thinking about what you're going to say? What does it look like for you?
So mainly how I write now is through free writing. So I will essentially journal about a topic or an idea I may have. Sometimes I just journal about my day. The thing with writing is it's a muscle and it's a discipline. So just showing up to the page is difficult enough for a lot of people. So I really lower the bar on, all right, let me just sit down and write the date at the top of the page. Or let me set a 10-minute timer and just stare at this piece of paper and do nothing else. Don't look at my phone or anything, just for 10 minutes. And if I come up with something, great. If not, hey, I still count that as a writing session for the day. So a lot of it to get the juices flowing is just free writing. Journaling basically is what free writing is, where you just kind of get all these ideas out of your head onto the page where you can start to really look at. You write out a page, then go back and read it and think, oh, that's interesting. Or this is a funny line, or this is a funny word. Even mm-hmm. comedy comes down to every single word. It's like a super detailed puzzle. So then from either a word or an idea or a phrase, I can take that and then start to build out what is funny about this thing that struck me. Because the mm-hmm. thing about, they call it a sense of humor, and I truly believe it is a sense. I believe it is a sixth sense within us all. To where when you see something you think is funny or you feel like there's something there, it's just this intangible instinct that you have. And that's why I always encourage comedians, because I will help comedians write jokes and I have classes and workshops and things. And it all comes down to following that instinct you have. You can learn these techniques, and don't forget to follow that instinct and apply these techniques to what you genuinely find funny and interesting. And a lot of your jokes won't start as, oh, this is hilarious. It starts more of, huh, there's something here. I'm not sure what it is yet, but I'm going to find out. Because joke writing is, it can be tedious. Sometimes a joke just magically appears and you're like, oh, I'm a genius. And other mm-hmm. times it's something you work out over months and months and months. So I always encourage comics to trust that instinct they have and trust that sense of humor. So when they think something is interesting, now it's time to go back and put in the work of, well, what is interesting about this? What are the different points of view about this? How do I feel about this idea or this situation? Can I turn this into like a one-liner misdirect? Is this more of like a long-form story where I add punchlines throughout? It's all dependent on your style, but I do encourage young comics to start it, at least start with one-liners, because you can see a professional comedian that's been doing it 20 or 30 years and think, oh, I'm just going to do that. They're just talking and it's funny, but you have to learn the rules before you break them. And one-liners are a great way to learn the structure of a joke, the actual rhythm of a joke, and how to take an idea in your head and structure it in a way to where it's consistently funny on stage. And one-liners are the best way to do that. And I did nothing but one-liners for the first several years of my career. Just learned how to make my everyday life funny before trying to tackle bigger topics. I think a lot of times comedians see the super successful people and they're tackling these super serious topics. And they're like, young comics are like, I want to have a message too. You can do that once you learn how to make your dog funny, or once you learn how to make something boring like your job or the weather funny. Making the mundane funny, then you can start to apply the techniques you've developed into bigger, more intricate topics. But it all starts one bite at a time. Just how do you make a setup punchline joke funny? You can start to expand it out from there.
So it's kind of like a, you learn how to make the puzzle, the pieces of the puzzle, and then you slowly piece them together. And then you finish the puzzle.
Yeah. How did you prepare for your sets? Like, how were you writing?
I have a Google Doc of just random ideas I think could be funny. And then maybe a few days before I go up, I start typing onto a Google Doc. And I think I just type, and then what I do is I highlight where I am hoping the audience will laugh. And then I'm thinking, what is it that with this punchline, what is it that's going to make the audience laugh? And then I look back and then I see kind of how I'm setting up the joke and see, will that work or will it not work? And then I memorize it and then I go on stage. I don't go on stage a lot. I think the first time I did comedy was 2 years ago, and I've only been on stage, I think, 6 to 8 times. Mm-hmm. So I haven't gone on stage a lot, but I have enjoyed the process of coming up with an idea and then writing it down and then trying to think of something that will make people laugh about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're on the great track there. Yeah, and I forgot, I used to type more as well because you can get your ideas out faster than just like trying to write it with your hand. Yeah, I would do that as well and bold and highlight ideas or things that stuck out to me that may be funny. So yeah, you're on the right track there for sure.
And do you go to open mics, or are you usually going to comedy bars and comedy clubs? And what sort of places do you perform at?
Well, for the first several years of my career, and probably honestly closer to the first 10 years of my career, I was on every night, anywhere and everywhere, just on stage, because that was the advice I got. Live on stage, get on stage as much as possible. And that would be comedy clubs, that would be strip clubs, that would be nightclubs where people are on stage like smoking hookah while you're performing, sidewalks, public buses. I mean, I've performed everywhere. And that's very valuable to develop as a comedian. And I say all that to say, now I'm more selective with where I perform. I don't just go to any and every open mic and just wait and at the corner of a bar where all the TVs are on and you're just trying to just survive. And everyone in there doesn't even know there's supposed to be comedy. I don't really do things like that anymore. I'm more selective on when I do local shows. It's more of like a showcase. It's more where there's an actual real audience there. It's more where I will get more stage time than just the 3 to 5 minutes. So I can really like establish a set, establish a rapport and develop material. Cause I'm more like I headline now. So that's more 45 minutes to an hour. So if I'm working out material somewhere locally, I want to make sure I'm getting more than just a little bit of a sprint to where I can really work out a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. So I'm more selective now, but the vast majority of my career, it was on stage anywhere, anytime, in front of anyone. I just want to get as good as this as possible. And I think that's super important for comedians to understand, is it is a lot of those just 1 a.m. shows on a Tuesday when people aren't even paying attention, but you're still on stage trying out these jokes and just getting comfortable being in those uncomfortable situations. All of that stage time is so valuable for comedians to develop that I hope this next generation is not taking for granted, as it's easy with social media and all that, to let me just post clips and try to blow up there. There's something to be said for that grind. You can't skip the work and stand up. You've got to be getting on stage if you really want to develop and build that momentum it requires to actually become a professional comedian.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you've performed at nightclubs and at public on buses.
Oh, yeah.
What does that look like? I've never heard of that before.
Well, a public bus, what happened, we were going to do this like kind of pop-up show on a public bus. We thought it would be funny. Uh-huh. And then when my friend got up to start the show, the bus driver turned around and was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "You're not staying up on my bus." So we ended up he got their attention, but we had to sit down to perform our stand-up comedy. So we're just sitting on the bus like crazy people yelling our material at these unsuspected, quote, audience members. Nightclubs, you know, in Atlanta, there's nightclubs everywhere. So any nightclub that had an off night that's trying to get people in thought comedy would be a good way to do that. And it ranged from, some were really good. A lot of them, people would get booed, which I've certainly had my fair share of. I got booed at a nightclub called Taboo. So boo was in the name. I should have known not to go, but I just booed them back. I booed the audience back. So it was a fun little game, but it's all anywhere and everywhere. It's Atlanta. The good thing about developing in Atlanta is it has an amazing comedy scene, and you can perform in front of a lot of different people a lot each week. Every night there's multiple shows you can get on stage and really get in front of a diverse crowd and figure out what you can make work in front of all these different walks of life. Because that's always my goal, is to create comedy that connects with everyone of all ages, of all backgrounds. I've always wanted to create that comedy for everyone, where grandkids to grandparents can come out, any race or background or experience that they may not live the same life as me, but they still connect with the authenticity of it. And that's something I was able to develop in Atlanta, just doing all these different shows in front of all these different people.
Mm-hmm. And I guess Atlanta is, it's a pretty big city, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have a lot of people to, a lot of different types of people to perform for.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm from, I'm living in a city called Victoria, in Canada, which is about a 20-minute flight from Vancouver. And it's not a big city. I would say it's, for American standards, it's probably a small city.
Yeah, I was just there. I went to visit Victoria with my family, and we went to a Bouchard Gardens.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
Yeah, I've been. It's super nice.
So nice. Yeah, so I was there just like last year. I loved it.
Uh-huh. And did you perform comedy here, or was this just for a family trip?
It was just a family trip, but I definitely want to get back. I know I have fans of the podcast that live in Victoria and that do comedy there. So I definitely want to make a trip back there. And I'm planning to do some Canada dates this year. I know I'm going to Toronto and hopefully Montreal right now. But I definitely want to get up there and perform.
Are you thinking of maybe coming to Vancouver?
I would love to. Yeah, I would love to. I haven't made any plans to yet, but that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. And you do go on tour, right? So you do travel around. What is it? What is that like?
The traveling or the just the whole getting on becoming a road comedian type deal?
Yeah, it you mentioned it was kind of lonely. So do you like do
You
you
mentioned you're sad. Tell me more about that. No, it's the thing about, and I'll get asked this too about comedians asking how they can get on the road more and things like that. And I will tell you from personal experience and just interviewing so many comedians, the vast majority of your opportunities are going to come from the other comedians that you meet along the way. So a mantra I live by is like, be nice, be funny. You always want to be nice and you always want to put on a good show to where people want to work with you again, because you never know a comic you meet your first 2 months into comedy. In the next 2 years, they may be booking the biggest shows in your area, or they may get a TV opportunity where they need a writer's room and they may want to hire you to write on that show. So most of your opportunities are going to come from other comedians. And I say that to say my life getting onto the road happened incrementally, where a few friends would take me out on the road and then I would start to get booked a little bit out on the road from referrals from friends telling other venues about me. And I would go there and open, and then I would come back and headline. It was just very incremental. But to actually live that full-time life, it is you may be gone a lot. You know, it's your weekends too. And as a comedian, you're always on call as well, that you may not be booked this evening. However, you never know, someone may cancel at the last minute, someone may get sick at the last minute and they need a fill-in, and you're the person they call to be that fill-in. So it's an interesting lifestyle in that you can be employed or unemployed at the snap of a finger. You know, the pandemic, we're all unemployed overnight. Comedians, you know, all of us that make a living on the road overnight, you're just like, oh, I don't have a job anymore. Just you wake up one day and you don't have a job anymore. So it was very enlightening to see that as comedians, you've got to get creative with how you move in this business and how you really differentiate yourself and how you diversify your streams of income where they can all help each other and you're not relying on just one stream. So the road is, it can be a lot of flying, a lot of driving as well. Right before the pandemic, I was booked at a country club, like 6 hours from my house. I left late. So for the whole drive, I knew I was going to be late for the gig. And I 6 hours and I couldn't stop. I just had to drive all the way there, walk right in, walk right on stage, do the show, and then like go to the bathroom and take a breath. Like I it was literally just it's I mean, I wouldn't do that now. I would leave earlier, but it's I don't know. I don't want to discourage anyone that wants to do it. But I am also, like I talked about with my open mics and things like that, and how selective I am there. I am more selective with the gigs I say yes and no to now. Early on in my road career, I said yes to everything. I drove 12 hours for $50 one time, because I was getting a lot of stage time from it. So those longer sets are very important for comedians, especially as you're transitioning from more of an open micer host into more feature headliner stage time. You take those lesser paying gigs for the longer stage time to just help you develop. So step in this career is for most people, some people blow up on social media and then they just jump right to the top of the line. But most of it is just paying your dues, putting in the work, grinding on stage each step of the way. And that path is great because you actually develop as a comedian. You actually start to understand the business of comedy and understand who you are as a comedian, as a brand, as a person. And you can start to make more thoughtful decisions based on the kind of life you want to live, which is what I've learned. Like you heard me say with the open mics and now road gigs, I don't say yes to everything. It's got to fit certain parameters. And it all comes down to who do you want to be as a comedian and what kind of life do you want to live as that comedian?
Mm-hmm. And, I've never thought of it that way. Because when you see comedians, it's just them being on stage, but you don't really see the kind of the backstage part about not being on stage and what that's like.
Oh yeah, and half the time on the road, it's traveling or sitting in a hotel room. You know, that's the vast majority. You know, if I go and do a college, you know, I'm driving up, getting there mid-afternoon, and then you're just kind of in this town for the day/night, and you're at this hotel, and I'll go for walks. I always look for a botanical garden or something I can go just enhance my life with. If I do a college, I like to go and walk around the campus, you know, so I like to stay active. I don't just like to sit in the hotel room, but you've got to be intentional about it. Cause I know friends who their whole life is the road, and it is just flight, rental car, hotel, flight, rental car, hotel, flight, rental car, hotel, you know, and then there's just shows in between there. So, and a lot of sometimes these shows are very late, 10, 11 o'clock, you know? So it's all just kind of the life you want to have and just being intentional about creating that life and setting that standard for yourself and your sanity as well.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with I think it's called the clown paradox or something like that, where comedians are typically known as like the depressed people.
Yeah. Yeah, tears of a clown and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's depressed people that are accountants too, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to say comedians are normal people. I think there is definitely something in our brains wired differently to think, oh, I want to get on stage and make a room of strangers laugh for a living. That's not a normal thing.
It's pretty weird. Once you think of it.
It's not normal. It's very rewarding and it makes a positive impact on the world and all of that. It's definitely not normal. But you don't have to be depressed or sad or broken to be a successful comedian or to be funny. It's comedy is to a certain level, like playing an instrument. It is a skill to a certain level. Like you can learn the skill of comedy. Now, to what level you excel at that, it comes down to talent, but also your work and opportunities and timing and things like that. So comedy is very similar in that way. So people can learn comedy and become professional and not necessarily have to be like these huge comedians out there right now, like a Mark Norman or like Andrew Schultz or something like that, or Nate Bargatze. Yeah. But I don't think, to go back to your question, I don't think comedians have to be depressed or broken to be funny. It's a fun story, the whole tears of a clown thing. And it is true. I mean, there are mental health issues with a lot of comedians, and that goes for people in all sorts of professions as well. So I don't subscribe to that. I'm a happy person. I mean, I work on myself as well. You know, I try to eat right. I try to exercise. I'm in therapy. I try to do the right things to really make myself the best version of me, to make me the best comedian possible. So I invest all those things into myself to make me the best version of myself, to put my best foot forward. And that's all intentional work that anyone can do. Mm-hmm. And I don't consider myself sad or lonely in that sense. I think that's just an old trope that is a fun story to think, oh, they're happy on stage and then sad the rest of the time. I don't subscribe to that. There's sad people in all jobs. But comedians are weird. I will say we're a weird bunch. And I think that's why we have that shorthand and that rapport with each other, because there's just something a little bit different of how our brains work and how we view the world. But I don't think we all view it as this sad, gloomy place for sure.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever deal with hecklers when you're on stage?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. You know, I mentioned I got booed I've been booed several times. I had one comedy club shut the lights off on me because I was bombing so bad. And then the DJ started playing like gunshot sound effects, which was great. Oh. I got heckled by the venue before.
Yeah.
So yeah, it happens every, it's part of a skill you have to develop as a comedian. And it's a skill that you kind of like learning comedy. You have to be on stage to learn it. You learn how to deal with hecklers by dealing with hecklers a lot and failing at trying to handle them a lot. And now with social media, you can post a clip of you, comedian destroys heckler, and then you can go viral and sell tickets, you know, and people make a living doing that. But a heckler, everyone assumes heckling is always negative. A lot of the time with a heckler, they're not intentionally trying to hurt the show. They're either drunk and having such a good time that they want to be a part of it and feel like they're a part of it and actually helping the show. They don't realize they're interrupting the show, or they just love, they're such a fan of you, they want to feel connected to you and yell something out about what you're talking about, or they really resonate with something you're saying about your relationship, and they may be, oh my gosh, that's like my husband or my wife or something like that. And they don't think of it as negative, but more of, oh cool, we're all in this kind of communal room and we're all like in this moment together. Now, heckling does interrupt the flow of the show, and you need to be able to, as a comedian, recognize what kind of heckle it is. Is it someone being mean and trying to disrupt the show? And you can handle that a certain way with a little more assertiveness. If it's someone just having fun and they just almost involuntarily yell out, or they just, sometimes people will just almost respond to your jokes as you're doing them, of just kind of, oh, that's funny. That's so funny. That's like so-and-so. And there's a part of it. So, and they're trying to be positive and they think they're helping a lot of ways. So you just want to be able to, as a comedian, over time, as you get heckled a lot, you'll start to notice what kind of heckle it is and how you can extinguish it or handle it in a fun and playful way that doesn't just reset the entire show. And an important thing for comedians to remember is, when it comes to a heckler, it's not you versus the heckler, it's you and the room versus the heckler. The whole audience is on your side. Most people know when you go to a comedy show, don't yell out, don't interrupt. That's the norm. So if someone does interrupt, the whole audience is on your side as well, with, okay, why is this person doing this? So a lot of our instincts can be to just yell at this person or get mad at them and punish them. But remember, it's them against the whole room. So they're way outnumbered. And you don't have to be as aggressive with them as you may assume. You can just playfully be like, oh, thank you for your support. Or, all right, I told you to wait in the car is a funny throwaway line, we'll say, you know. So there's silly ways to handle it. But I think as a comedian and you get more developed, you'll start to recognize what kind of heckle it is and how to appropriately address it. And it comes down to, again, stage time.
I think a big part of is probably bombing and failing, and yeah, just knowing what it's like to be up there and it's just complete silence.
For sure. And you're flop sweating and you feel the sweat rolling down your back.
Yeah.
And nothing's working. And the set you did last night that killed, you're doing the same thing tonight and nothing's working. It's that a lot. Over and over and over and over again. Yeah.
I think go on.
I was just going to say, I developed and would notice I was getting better because the bombs would be less frequent. So one out of every, you know, 4 out of 5 shows, let's say you bomb. And then the next time or the next few months, you're like, oh, 3 out of every 5 shows I bombed, or 2 out of every 5, or I haven't bombed. I've only bombed twice this month. And you start to see your progress that way. But at every level, no one's immune to bombing. Joe Coy at the Golden Globes, you know, he's one of the biggest comedians in the world. And he struggled at that event. You know, Dave Chappelle got booed a few years ago. At every level, there's all these obstacles comedians have to overcome, regardless of how successful or good they are at the craft. So it's just kind of just part of the job description.
Mm-hmm. And would you say a part of it is when political comics, they go up, and where we have polarization, where let's say a comedian is talking about their personal political views and a bunch of the audience disagrees with that view?
Yeah, that's a big part of it, you know, and that's part of my personal style of comedy is my goal is for everyone to enjoy the shows, you know, regardless of their political affiliation and things like that. I want my shows to be an escape from all that. And I talk about what I find interesting or what I find funny or talk about my own life and just my personal point of view on the world. And all my material comes from that perspective. Now, there are comedians out there with a different mission in this game, and they want to have like a hard message to where they're changing people's minds. They want people to know how they think and feel about what's happening in the world. That's just not my personal approach to comedy. And I see nothing wrong with that. And I think there should be comedians that do that. And there are great comedians that are able to do that. And when you do address controversial topics, it's going to create controversy. It's going to make people feel a certain way or make them feel uncomfortable about what you're saying. And if that's the kind of comedian you want to be, then like I mentioned earlier, if you're younger in the game, learn how to be funny first. Learn how to make the mundane funny before you try to tackle these big political ideas and how you want to show the world how you think. Learn first how to be funny. Learn those techniques. Get good at those. And then you can apply those skills to the bigger political controversial topics. But a lot of young comics just try to jump straight to the edgy stuff, not even knowing how to write a joke, not even knowing what their voice is. And you get away with all the edgy stuff because you're such a good comedian. You know how to write your way into making something controversial funny. And there's always going to be some people that get offended or that aren't laughing, or they're just not you're not their style of comedian. There's always going to be that. But definitely with politics and topics like that, that is definitely where you're going to divide a room or make people think and feel a certain way, which then may create more heckling opportunities. So it's a risk, but it can be a high reward if that's what you want to do in your comedy career.
Mm-hmm. I have a question that has nothing to do with comedy.
Okay.
What were you like in high school? What type of person were you like in high school?
Oh, I mean, high school, I was a silly goose. You know, I've always been a silly goose. I've always been a silly kid my whole life. Mm-hmm. And in high school, I was voted wittiest. And I wasn't a disruptive funny, though. I was more socially funny. I changed schools a few times throughout my life, so I had to get good at creating connections with different people in different environments. So I would be more of a funny in a way to where the jocks could laugh with the artsy people, just for example. Like I was always just trying to be friends with everyone, and I always especially wanted to... I was always raised to like root for the underdog and look out for people who maybe a little under, I don't know if represented is the right word, but underdog really, and really make a safe space for everyone to come together and everyone can get along. And I would use humor as a way to really connect people. And in high school, I was friends with everyone. I didn't have a certain clique. I could kind of use comedy. One of my favorite ways I would use comedy for students that are funny is in group projects. What you can do is just keep people laughing so they're distracted from you not doing any of the work. It's a great way to, it keeps the, because laughter, and it releases endorphins. It's a feel good chemical. So it keeps people feeling good and they're having fun in this group activity. And you're just kind of sitting back and just using humor as a way to keep the synergy going. So I would get really good at that in group activities, but I've always been funny and just would use it in creative ways.
That is a good idea.
You guys, yeah, take that one home with the kids. That's the best comedy advice you'll get today.
Oh, I'm definitely going to be using that.
That's hilarious.
Oh. So when you were a child, you talked about being funny. Did you ever watch and listen to comedians when you were a child?
Yeah, the first comic I ever saw on TV was Sinbad, who one of the most underrated comedians ever. Still on my Mount Rushmore, one of my favorite comedians, if not my favorite comedian. He was the first comic I saw on TV, and I remember him, one, he was clean, and he was just having fun. He's a comedian. People aren't going there for his political take or anything like that. They're going there to have a good time. He's super high energy. He would always wear like fun and funky clothes. He would talk about his life and growing up and things. So he was one that really stuck out to me as, oh, I want to do that. He was the first comic I saw on TV and thought, oh, I could do that. Mm-hmm. Kevin James, another one who I would watch a lot. Mitch Hedberg is another one. And Dan Cook is another one as well that I would watch going up. So I kind of was a little bit of everyone. I would take inspiration from all different styles, all different points of view, and people's approaches to comedy. And now I've just kind of slowly morphed it into my own version of myself. And a lot of comics early on do sound like their favorite comedians. You know, when I first started, I did sound like Mitch Hedberg, who, if I mentioned one-liners earlier, this is a great comic to go study to learn one-liners and just that setup, punch, misdirect structure. This guy was killer comedian and just one of the best joke writers in the game. And a different style from what I do now. But when I started, I was very one-liner driven and I did sound like Mitch a lot. And that's very common with younger comics. They start to sound like their own inspirations. A lot like musicians. They'll sound like some of their favorite musicians early on, just learning how to emulate and even play chords and stuff. So those are a few that were in the early stages of my career that really helped to develop my sense of humor. But I love all comedians from all different styles and walks of life, for sure.
And so I guess music and comedy, they're quite, keeps coming up in our conversation, is that music and comedy, they're very similar in that they connect people. The one difference being that you can't use music in a classroom setting to distract people. But they are quite connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah. There's a rhythm, there's a timing, there's a pacing to comedy, that there's a musicality to comedy, how you use your voice, how you can bring it up, you can bring it down, you can emphasize it in different ways. Yeah, there's a lot of parallels between the two. Yeah.
And I've also seen some comedians, they will actually write a song. Mm-hmm. And Bo Burnham, quite good. He's written some comedy songs. And so I think there is kind of a connection between those two, and that they're pretty similar.
For sure. And the great thing about comedy is it's what you want it to be. At the end of the day, it's you can take all the advice, you can learn and develop the technique behind comedy. And once you learn those techniques, you can use them to make it your own. That's how you find your voice, is by doing what you authentically find funny. So you also, being a skilled musician, there may be some parallels there to where it's not just straight stand-up, but you're also doing music and things like that. So comedy is whatever you want it to be and whatever you find authentically funny. And the more you trust yourself and the more you listen to that inner voice and tap into that sense of humor, the more aware of it you'll be, the better you'll be able to start using it and actually translate it into a room of strangers that actually laugh and aren't confused about it, which a lot of the early stages are, what are you saying type deal.
Yeah.
If it's something you love and care about, then you're willing to put in the work to persevere and to actually find what is uniquely funny about you and your sense of humor that mm-hmm. will make the world a better place.
Are you yourself a musician?
I'm not. I've tried to play guitar several times. I am currently learning Spanish, which is not music, but there is a parallel. I have heard the analogy of like comedy is learning another language, and the stage is your immersion, basically, is why you have to be on stage a lot, because that's where your immersion of learning that comedy language on stage in front of strangers. Mm-hmm. So I've always used that analogy, and now I'm applying it to actually learning a language. And because mm-hmm. I love teaching comedy as well, and helping comedians or helping people that are fans of comedy want to learn more about it, or in public speaking want to learn how to utilize comedy in their public speaking to help with engaging an audience or stage presence and things like that. So I'm always looking for more ways to teach the craft that can translate to more and more people. So I'm currently learning Spanish as a way to put that theory to the test of, okay, if comedy is a language, well, how do you learn a language? And let me mm-hmm. see what all the parallels there are. So I've been doing that for like 2 months, and mm-hmm. I can already see several parallels. So I'm excited to keep developing that theory as well. But music, I just never stuck with. I would have loved to, but I was young and I just never committed to it. But I salute you, because it takes a lot of perseverance for sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself maybe doing stand-up comedy in Spanish?
Oh, sí, claro. I would love that. Oh, I would love that. Absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
I think because I speak Mandarin at home, I make people laugh more when I'm speaking English than I'm speaking Mandarin, just because my English is definitely better than my Mandarin.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes if I think of something funny, because I talk to my family in Mandarin, and I want to say something funny to my family, but I can't really think of the word, so I'll kind of mix in some English.
Yeah.
And pick and choose.
Sounds like you have a lot of unique life experiences to draw from.
Yeah.
Like in your comedy and creativity, it sounds like you have a unique, that's what you're always looking for in comedy, is how you can stand out. And people talk about joke stealing and things like that, but no mm-hmm. one can steal you. I can write a silly one-liner that anyone could say and it be just as funny. I'm always mm-hmm. looking for material that someone could steal the joke, mm-hmm. but it's not as funny because it's not me saying it. It's not coming from my point of view and my voice. So I'm always mm-hmm. looking for those angles on my writing and jokes. This is funny, but it's kind of something anyone could do. And I'll mm-hmm. scrap that and keep digging deeper into what is more personal to me. So it sounds like you have a lot of unique traits and life experiences that will already help you stand out in comedy or whatever creative endeavors you do. It seems like you're on the right track there.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions for me?
It's a great question.
Yeah, I really put you on the spot here.
The hard-hitting questions here. Put me in a hot seat. Well, who are some of your favorite comedians?
Oh, Conan O'Brien, he's not a stand-up comedian, but I really like, he's really good interacting with people mm-hmm. in that sort of improvisational manner.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had his talk show, whenever something went wrong, he would always be able to make that funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that was really admirable in that he was really quick with improv.
Oh, I love that.
I also, I also am a big fan of John Mulaney.
Yeah.
And I went to watch him in Vancouver, and I went with my mom. And because my mom's English isn't as good as her Mandarin, she was kind of wondering, why are people finding this funny? And and then because it went out pretty late, and we were worried that the metro system would shut down, so I left about half an hour early.
From John Mulaney?
Yeah. It was a good show, but I'm still kind of a bit grumpy. I missed that last 30 minutes, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh, those are two of my favorites.
Yeah.
You have great taste.
Who else is there? Mark Norman.
Yes. Yeah.
I really like his material. It's really punchy, short and witty.
Yeah. Talk about joke writing. He's one of the best.
George Carlin. He's a great comedian. I'm trying to watch as many comedians as possible, trying to see how people do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's like different styles. There's like some people, they have impressions. I don't think I could do that, but it's really fun when they have like the different voices, and then they're mimicking a person talking, and they'll pretend to be one person, and then they'll pretend to be another person. That definitely takes a lot of practice to be able to pretend to be one person and then swap to another person and not get them mixed up.
Yep. Yeah. It takes, the act outs are a whole other skill set you have to develop, you know, mm-hmm. doing the characters and voices and all that.
Mm-hmm. And when you're watching them, they it seems like it's all off the top of their head, but they've rehearsed it and done it so many times.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the magic trick of comedy that people, like we talked earlier, of you're at a party and people are like, oh, I've got a joke for you type deal, or tell me a joke. You know, that is the magic trick, to where people look at a comedian and, oh, they're just up there talking. It's just, and even as a comedian, you can get lost in, wow, that is coming off so natural. How have they developed jokes in such a conversational way to where you get lost in just the performance? You don't even think, oh, there was a joke. And it comes off just so natural. It takes years and decades to develop that. Mm-hmm. But that is the goal, at least if that's your style and you're less storytelling. And if you're more like one-liners, then it's going to be different, you know, and it won't be as quote conversational. But it's still entertaining and still very interesting. So it's whatever you want your style to be. But it is really, yeah, when you think about a Mark Norman, and his writing is actually, I talked about pen to paper, you know, or typing.
Yeah.
What he actually does is he'll walk around his hotel room or his apartment and just talk about this idea. And as he comes up with a punchline or thinks of an idea from just talking to himself, he'll mm-hmm. then like write it down and be like, oh, I got to try that on stage. So his writing technique is, I'm going to be saying this out loud on stage, so why not I write in that way and just mm-hmm. talk to myself and talk through these ideas and topics and see what I can find funny about it just in my conversation. So mm-hmm. I've tried that. I feel very weird and uncomfortable just standing in my room talking to myself. But he clearly knows what he's doing because he's one of the biggest comics in the game right now. So mm-hmm. that's just another interesting example of just how to develop jokes. Is, you know, early on he was very one-liner driven and very pen to paper, and he's just developed a more conversational style, and this is how he develops now. So mm-hmm. it's unique to hear. That's why I love interviewing comedians. It's because you learn, we're all trying to get to the same end goal of how can I achieve this laugh?
Mm-hmm.
But we can all find our different approaches to getting there. Once you learn the fundamentals, then you can start to make them your own. You learn the rules and then you break them, which is what the greats like Mark Norman are doing.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite comedians that you've interviewed?
Well, Bo Burnham is a good one. Mm-hmm. Mark Norman. I've been fortunate enough to have Mark on 3 times. Wow. And I had him on very early in his career. And this was before I even had video with my podcast. This was early on in both of our journeys there. And then I've been able to interview him kind of a few years later, and then a few years later. And now we're due for a fourth, Mark. We're due for a fourth, because now he's blown up and sun out theaters. So I've kind of been able to keep up with him throughout the trajectory of his career. Andrew Schultz is another one. Jeff Foxworthy. I mean, there's so many because it's over 400. So it, at this point, each one has a different special place in my heart, just because it's, I learned something different from each one, and I hope other people do as well. But that's probably a handful. Cedric the Entertainer was very cool as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sam Morril. I mean, there's, I've been, it's very.
These are also some of, I also enjoy listening to these comedians. They're,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we should be friends.
I think we already are.
I love it.
Do you have any other questions for me before we go?
How many other comedians are you interviewing?
So yesterday, I reached out to a lot of comedians because I had this idea that none of them would get back to me.
Hilarious.
And a surprising amount have actually gotten back to me. And for this project, I only needed to do one, but then I really wanted to talk to all of these comedians. So I think I'm doing 3 people have got back to me. So I was interviewing Dennis Reagan yesterday.
And okay, is that Brian Regan's brother?
Yes, yeah.
Uh-huh. Great.
And I still need to get back to Tony Dale. Tony Dale.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
I've heard his name. I don't know him, but I've heard his name. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you got all you need here. You can just cancel them now. Cancel all your others. You got the goods right here. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
What you'll learn is that comedians, and that's what I've learned from interviewing comedians and being a comedian myself, is comedians do enjoy helping other comedians. And the older generations like helping the next generation, you know? Mm-hmm. And like the mission statement of my podcast is helping cultivate the next generation of self-made comics. Because the whole goal is to be interviewing these comedians that can help give the advice they learn the hard way for these younger comics to apply and develop faster and find their own opportunities in this game. So you'll learn. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you, especially coming from where you're coming from in terms of a newer, younger, curious comic who's looking to learn even how to even get started in a sense, a lot of like professional comics can see themselves in that and would want to help out. So I say that to say, I know you've got Joel Byers on here, but if you want Mark Norman, I mean, figure out how to reach out to him. Or you're like, don't limit your thinking of, oh, well, I can only get this level. You never, the worst thing I can say is no, or the worst thing is they don't reply. But I think you would be surprised if you just swing for the fences, even if it's not for this school project, that you may be able to just interview these people and have it in a time capsule to learn from as well. So I just say that if you're looking to interview comedians, you know, swing for the fences, see what could happen. Try to figure out how to get in touch with John Mulaney. You know, if it's something you're really passionate about, I think you could really do it.
Mm-hmm. That's some deep advice.
Yeah. I'm excited. I was excited you reached out. And I think how you reached out to me with, you referenced certain joke I had and how you enjoyed my comedy, like really reaching out to people with that earnestness of, you're not trying to get something from them, but you're actually a fan of them and you're trying to learn from mm-hmm. them, and you're sincere yeah. about it. That really stuck out to me with you reaching out to me, because I will get people that try to DM me and they're just like, yo, let me get this, or when can we do such and such? But you were very sincere and professional about how you reached out. And that mm-hmm. really goes a long way when you're trying to connect with these bigger and bigger comedians.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Do you do these types of interviews often?
Every once in a while. Like people reach, like a younger comic wanting to interview me. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm actually doing another one this afternoon, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. Fine. So, yeah, I do like to do them. And I'm doing them more and more now as mm-hmm. I've been building up my own podcast. A lot of comedians find a lot of inspiration from it, and they want me to go on their podcast or help them with their project and mm-hmm. things like that. Or a lot of what I've learned as well is I'm getting booked from other comedians in the community now as well. Cause the podcast is really, it's an online community as well of comedians mm-hmm. that help yeah. each other. So I've been fortunate enough to get into different festivals and perform on really cool shows just based on the podcast and comics finding inspiration and wanting to give back or reach out. So it's very rewarding and something I didn't expect when I started it like 6 or 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I love doing these types of things though, for sure.
I definitely do enjoy talking to people, especially comedians like you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anything yeah. I can do to help you, I'm here for you. And I mentioned I have a Facebook group connected to the podcast where we do a lot of writing and mm-hmm. stuff in there. And I mentioned doing this interview, and there was a few comedians from Vancouver in there who commented and were like, oh, if he wants help with stage time or whatnot, tell him to reach out. So,
that's very sweet of them.
Yeah. So, you know, you're already in what we call the hot breath-averse.
Awesome. Thank you very much for doing this.
Of course, Yuray. We're friends now, so anything I can do to help, I'm here yeah. for you, buddy.
I'm part of the hot breath-averse.
Let's go! Thank you for listening, Comedy Fam. If you enjoyed these, please do let me know on social media, and I can start posting other podcasts I've been on, in addition to being on yours, if you'd like to interview me. I love helping comics. That's why I just started teaching a clean comedy workshop that has sold out the past 3 weeks. So if you're interested in joining a future one, join the waitlist linked in the description of this episode. And join me live on YouTube with my co-host Yoshi So every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And until then, my friends, we'll see you later on Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.